back with you on Saturday Morning 60s, a special Christmas Eve rebroadcast of my conversation with Brian Wilson. We continue now with three number one hit singles co-written by Brian at WNEW-FM.
Round, round, get around, I get around, yeah, get around, round, round, I get around. I gotta find a new place where the kids are hip. My buddies and me, you're getting real well known. Yeah, the bad guys know us and they leave us alone. I get around.
I Get Around was done more or less spontaneously. It was a real quick song, you know. It's the kind of song that was written in like a half hour, you know. It was one of those quickies where, you know, you think, whoa, I got a song here. I can't believe how fast I wrote it, you know. It's really, really something.
What about Help Me Rhonda? What do you remember about that one?
Help Me Rhonda was early 1965, and it was... I used ukuleles on it. I never had ever used ukuleles. I've always liked the ukulele, you know. Uh-huh, uh-huh. But I never had played a ukulele. I never really, I just told the ukulele players what to play, you know.
Right.
And they were mixed in there very subtly. They were mixed in very subtly to the rest of the instruments. But you know, it was a step forward, you know, ukuleles and stuff like that. And mm-hmm. So we put Al on the lead because Al hadn't had a chance to sing for a while.
That's right. Yeah, that is one of the ones that Al Jardine does lead vocal on.
Yes.
Well, since she put me down, I've been up to and in my head. I come in late at night.
At 102.7, all of those were number one singles that my special guests had a little something to do with. We heard I Get Around, and Help Me Rhonda by the Beach Boys, and then that third one by Jan and Dean, Surf City, co-authored by Brian Wilson. And I think of that, Brian, as the one that got away. You know what I mean? I mean, here's a talented guy writing songs. You'd think he'd want to keep the number one songs for himself. And somehow, here you were, given one to a couple of buddies. Is that the way it went? How did that come about? How did it happen?
Surf City?
Yeah.
Well, Jan Berry came over to my house in Hollywood and asked me if I'd like to write a song called Surf City with him. And I came, two girls for every boy. That was actually Jan's idea. And I came out. So he did the chords and I did the melody. And we worked on it back and forth till way late that night. And by the morning light, we had a song all done.
Ah. Did the group ever get on your case for not saving that one for yourself?
No, they didn't. The group figured it would be good promotion for them because it was the West Coast sound, you know?
It sure was, yeah. Jan and Dean were practitioners of it as well
yes.
as the Beach Boys. In those days, did you know which ones were the hits or was it as big a surprise to you as it was to the listeners out there? I know that this one is top 10. Anything?
Well, I actually, California Girls, to tell you the truth, I was more confident about that than any other song.
Do you remember why?
A record. Yes, I do. I remember because when I heard the introduction to it, when it was all done, I said, that is a smash intro. Well, at least I knew I had a smash intro. I didn't know if I had a smash song. Mm-hmm. But I was sure that this intro was a smash.
Boys and California Girls are Brian Wilson's special. Will continue after this. This is Pete Fornital with more of our Christmas Eve Brian Wilson special on Saturday Morning 60s at WNEW-FM.
I don't know why, but I keep thinking.
When did it occur to you that that the Beach Boys' music meant more to people than just a diversion or just another hit, that it really occupied a special place in their lives? When did that really strike home and you were sure of it?
Of what? I didn't quite get the question.
Okay. Was there a moment when you realized that the Beach Boys were a really special band in people's lives?
You know, I realized that in 1963, early 1963.
What did it? What gave you that awareness?
That was given to me by my dad, who told me, he said, "You guys are getting big." The way he said that, you know. And I just said, you know, I got the connection, right? So I got the vibration on it, you know.
It must have made you nervous, too. I mean, there's a lot of responsibility that goes along with that, isn't there?
Sure. And it you live up to your name. You know, each year you live up to your name.
Yeah.
So that's all I'm saying, you know, is that you live up to your name every year. You live up to every day, every week.
Well, part of that is people have expectations of you after you've been successful. There's a good side to that, but there's also a bad side, isn't it? Isn't there?
Yeah.
There's the side where people might have misconceptions about you. You know, if you walk down the street, and let's say you're not around, and you mention Brian Wilson to people, they form immediately an impression in their minds.
Yes.
What would you say are the biggest misconceptions about you that you would like to clear up? You know what I mean? In other words, there's Brian Wilson, the pop star, and there's Brian Wilson, the human being. If you had the opportunity, as you do right now, to talk to people and say, you know, this, you know, these are some real things to know about Brian Wilson, what would you say?
I would say, first of all, please don't think Brian Wilson is a little namby-pamby, because I'm a very strong man, and I must live up to that.
So you don't want him, number one, you don't want him worrying about you. Is that,
yes.
Is that accurate?
Yes.
What else? What else would you like them to know about the real...
No, that I really love people spiritually, and that's why I make music, is because of the spiritualness of it.
Uh-huh.
The idea that you can listen to a message on a record and feel better for the rest of the day, that's amazing. What else but a record could do that, or a good movie? You know, a good movie is probably my favorite thing in the world, but records too, you know?
Sure, absolutely.
I've been in this town so long and back in the city. I've been taken for lost and gone and unknown for a long, long time. Fell in love years ago with an innocent girl from the Spanish and Indian home, home of the heroes and
with my special guest today, Brian Wilson. I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to take that walk down the hall that I promised earlier over to the AM side of the building and see if we can plug in the studio with a piano in it and see what happens. In the meantime, what I'd like you to listen to in order for us to arrange that is the rather creative suite that occupies a good portion of the new Brian Wilson solo album. It's his first extended piece in some time. Oh, and here's Brian to tell us a little bit about it. I was just leading into Rio Grande, yeah. Brian. Very ambitious track for the new album, yes?
Rio Grande was another pocket symphony.
Ah. You know?
That's the definition. Good Vibrations was a true pocket symphony, but Rio Grande was like a positive...
positive.
What was I saying before? I'm so excited, you know.
You know, I was going to say, you've been doing what you do for a long time. I've been doing what I do for a long time, but I've got these butterflies this morning, and I know that they are of excitement because it is, let me say again, in case I haven't made the point, that it is really, really special and great to have you here.
Well, it's good to be here, you know, on what is this? It's August?
This is August 20th.
August 20th, 1988. What a good day this is.
Yeah. And
I wondered about that when I first woke up. I said, yeah, what's the date today, you know? Special, some special days, special vibrations in the air, you know? A radio show to do, and I'm sailing. You know what I mean?
You having a good time?
Oh yeah, I'm on my second wind now.
All right. Well, we're gonna take you to that other studio across the hall. But to do that, I wanted to get into to Rio Grande. I read somewhere that you had to be convinced to do this. Is that true?
Well, yeah. I mean, we all share it. You know. I mean. But what I'm trying to say is, it was. I was convinced that we could do something like this. Yes, I was.
Okay.
And my collaborator, Dr. Landy, and also the president of Warner Brothers Records. Can you believe that? Lenny Warnker, both said that they're very positive that this is a possibility of a pocket symphony, a little rock opera. Gene calls it Life's Sweet. Uh-huh. Lenny calls it Rio Grande.
Right. Were you a little nervous about it?
Yeah, because, see, I didn't want to muff it, you know what I mean? I thought I'd pace myself, you know, because a lot of things were going on at that time, you know?
Yeah.
And it only takes a fool who doesn't realize that, too, you know? Because there are a lot of things going on, you know? And you wish, you want to be somewhere else, and you said, I went through that dilemma where I said, you know, I want to be somewhere else. I want to be where he is. I want to be where he is, you know? And I said, what is all this, you know? Nah, I want to be where I am, you know?
Other performers, other artists? I mean, when you say you want to be where he is, who would you define the he as?
Dr. Landy. Ah. I've always been fascinated with Dr. Landy. You know, Gene Landy is the biggest, genius at this business that anybody I know. He's been around in the underground for a while, and he just emerged. He kind of like... emerged out of the underground thing to work with me, and he took my life over as a doctor. But then he ended his doctorship with me, and now he's just a pretty great executive producer, which I feel the world will know someday just who Gene really is, you know?
He is a controversial man.
Yes, he is. He's been accused of a few things by my family. A couple things like misconduct as a doctor, but this is all false, absolutely false, you know what I mean? No, nobody in their right mind would ever make a statement about him if they knew him well, like I do, you know?
Yeah. It's unfortunate, though, that it has caused some dissension with people that are otherwise very important in your life. I'm thinking specifically of Carl at this point. Are relations with Carl in a bad place right now?
In a silent place. What it is that Carl feels... that I'm his leader musically, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't want to answer to his big brother, you know? Mm-hmm. You don't want to be a little brother and have big brother get all the attention in the group, you know? That's going to be an imposition on him, as just for starters, a little imposition.
Yeah.
That's all past. That's water under the bridge. We've got things to do. I want to go back to basics and kind of pick up where I left off somewhere. I don't know what year exactly it was or whatever. I just want to pick up where I left off and zero into something that I think is going to be meaningful for this world.
Uh-huh.
Because I know that all those people out there that are just crying for a little love, maybe a little attention too, you know. Well, you can get that through music, you can get it through movies, but especially music, because music moves the soul, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why Love and Mercy was created, so that we could move people's souls and assure people that they're going to be okay and that things are going to be fine.
Well, there's some of that in Rio Grande as well, although it covers a lot of ground. There's some scary parts in it as there are scary parts in life, yes?
Absolutely. And those are, but you said it's scary parts, not the whole. The bigger picture tells you that it isn't scary.
Yeah.
But the minor picture, in some cases, will try to convince you that it's scary, or you're going to be afraid, or you're going to lose sight of this, or that's going to happen to you. You know, I mean, it's all a matter of self-control.
Yeah.
Controlling those emotions, zeroing in with your brain, saying, you know, hey, that's a bunch of hooey, you know? Having the guts to say, that's a bunch of hooey, you know?
When Rio Grande was finished, were you pleased with it?
Oh, absolutely. I thought it was great.
All right, we're going to listen at 1027 WNEW-FM.
Down, boy, come down, yeah, yeah.
at 1027. That is Rio Grande from the solo album by Brian Wilson. And I'll be back with more with Brian right after these messages. At 1027, Pete Fornital back with you on this special edition of Saturday Morning 60s with my guest, Brian Wilson. We're just going to eavesdrop here. We went over to the AM side of the building where there is a piano. And Brian, you know, it's so difficult to talk about the creative process. I had intended to ask you this question whether or not we got the opportunity to do this, which is, how do you write? How do you compose? How does that process work?
Well, it starts with something like, you know, like a shuffle beat. Say you're into a shuffle beat mood, shuffle right. mood. Well, then you add like, you know, and you get a background arrangement feeling going, right?
Right.
And then you can start melt, like a melody could be like, so you have all these ingredients. You've got the chords, you've got the rhythm, you've got the melody, and you've got the lyrics.
Right. Do you hear the finished product in your head already?
No. When I write a song, I write, first I have to write it. Then you hear the overall sound as a producer, yes.
Ah.
But as a songwriter, what you do is you write the song first, you know, so you have a piece of material. Then the producer gets the artist. In some cases, like Paul McCartney, he does the whole batch. He does it all himself.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I do the same thing, and, you know.
Is there a song from the new album that you can kind of go backwards with? In other words, we now know it as the finished track as it appears
yeah.
on Brian Wilson, your solo album. Is there one of the tracks that you can take back to its earliest stage, where the idea came from and how you executed the idea? What comes to mind?
These chords here. Idea. A love song, a pretty, like a spiritual kind of a feeling, you know?
But no lyrics at that point?
No.
That came
later.
At what point? At what point in the process?
About a month later.
Did you have all of the chords and the changes? Did you have the track done at that point?
No. We did not have the track done when it was done. The track was recorded about 2 weeks after we wrote that song in Honolulu, Hawaii.
Uh-huh.
And it was one of the greatest tracks I'd ever done. I also put on the background voices. See, when I was with the Beach Boys, and I still am in a sense, each of us would have a note, right? You know, and like there'd be five notes in a chord for us, because there's five Beach Boys, right?
Right.
Well, when I went to Honolulu, I put on all four voices by myself, one track at a time, all of Brian Wilson's voices. I was sitting in a crummy movie with my hands on my
sometimes you get an insight into a song.
Yes.
When it's done in a rearranged fashion. For example, Bruce Springsteen on his current tour is doing Born to Run, which we all know as like a big sound, Phil Spector type wall of sound. He's just doing it alone with an acoustic guitar, and it gives the song a whole new dimension, a whole new meaning. In fact, you did that once. Let me remind you of something that really impressed me and see if we can...
Okay.
This had to be 1967, when just at the point where rock and roll was starting to be considered as a more serious type of music than just hit records in the top 40. And no less a presence than Leonard Bernstein did a special on CBS examining the new music. And he had as guests on that program the Blues Project, and they did their beautiful instrumental piece, Flute Thing. And he had Janis Ian on, and she did Society's Child. And he also had Brian Wilson on at a piano playing a little bit of Surf's Up. Do you remember that? Is that song?
Somewhat, yes.
Is that song still a special one for you?
Oh, very much. I mean, Van Dyke Parks wrote that.
Yeah.
Absolutely special.
Do you recall enough of the lyrics to do any part of it for us?
I couldn't. No, I don't recall those lyrics. Okay. It's a long time ago.
Sure. I can understand that. Well,
22 years ago, to be exact.
Oh, exactly. Sure. But that's an example of what I meant, though. Everybody knows the finished version as it came out in 71. Then there's also, for the lucky people who get the chance to see it, there's also that very, shall we call it, primitive version of it with just you alone at your piano on that special.
Yes, I remember that, yes. Yeah. Of course, I remember that now.
Yeah.